VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning, and it's 10 o'clock, and this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And on this most glorious Saturday morning, true Chamber of Commerce weather, we are here as always live in the studio so that if you would like to talk to us, ask some questions or whatever, we are here and all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. I always remind people that most financial shows are pre-recorded. You don't get a chance to discuss on the show what you want to talk about. So if you would like to change all that, that's all you have to do. We have plenty of things to talk about, but I'd much rather talk with you and or about you. So give us a call. Callers always go to the front. We will have a trivia question, as usual, as soon as I decide which one out of all these wonderful little goodies I've got today. And we're going to talk a lot about things like taxes and the market. We managed to set some records again in the market this week. And it's getting to the point now where it's almost boring, but not for long, I think. Yes, this is just, it's a little too good to be true, which does not mean that you ought to be taking dramatic action, but don't be surprised if we have a little pullback here pretty soon. There's just been a lot of exuberance. It takes me and all the people my age back to the days of Alan Greenspan and his irrational exuberance comment. I don't think we're there yet. But meanwhile, you can do what Adam and I have been doing, and that's just sit back, smile, and have a good time.
It has been pretty fun.
It has indeed. All right, set a record this week. What happened?
Yeah, so you mentioned the major dips that we haven't had recently. Do you know what the last major dip was?
It was before the election.
It was actually leading up to the election.
It was based on the rumor that Trump could possibly win.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was the last time.
It's more than ironic. It's humorous beyond my feeble ability to find the good words for it.
On Thursday, we did see the Dow drop over 100 points, though, which that seems like it's been forever since we've seen that.
Under 0.5%.
Yeah, exactly. It really doesn't represent as much as it used to. But luckily on Wednesday, we also saw the market go up 300 points. So that
and just snuck over, again, the big mark that was set this week.
Right, 21,000. So it all in all was a pretty good week. The big trading news this week was actually based on Trump as well. It was his speech to Congress on Tuesday, which I noticed that even CNN had a hard time saying anything bad about, which is unusual.
A few of them managed.
Yeah, they always find something.
Sure.
It was overall very well received, and the reaction on Wednesday was a 300-point positive day on Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, after all the exposure that guy's had for the last, three, four decades, that there are people now just finding out that he's actually an intelligent guy with things to say. And they're shocked.
Yeah. They're also shocked that he's actually doing exactly what he said
during
the campaign.
Now, that's shocking.
That is really.
This is not done in D.C.
Right. So the net result for the week was just under 1% increase for the Dow and a 0.7% increase for the S&P and a 0.4% increase for the NASDAQ. So really another good week, and the rally just keeps chugging along.
Been a good year. If you cut it off right now and didn't do anything, we'd call it very acceptable.
I wish we could just do that and take that result, but
just collect dividends from here to the end.
That would be nice.
Not going to happen.
price-to-earnings ratios had already been pretty high, and now they're even higher. The trailing 12-month ratio crossed 22 this week, which is historically high, although nowhere near the all-time highs set in March of 2000. So we're not in what I would call danger territory,
no,
but it is higher than the
norm. It's 5.5% above the historical median. And all it would take, and this is what we've talked about for ages around here, all it would take to bring that down to being average again is a good earnings season.
Correct.
Which can't be predicated any longer just on profit growth. It has to start including growth in revenues, because you can't grow that much without growing revenue. The good news, I think you're going to see that start happening.
I hope you're right. I think there's a strong possibility of it. I think that companies are
more optimistic. Yeah, I'm deriving that from consumer optimism and retail and the service sector coming back.
Well, service sector never really went away. It dipped a little bit.
It's actually growing again, though, and I like that. People are going to make a lot of money there, and they will support the manufacturing sector.
Yeah, and the reason the service sector is so important is that it's so much bigger than the manufacturing sector at this point.
Yep.
So technology has surged this year to lead all sectors with a gain of 10.04%, and healthcare has also started to catch up at 9.36%.
And
it's also the most overbought sector, though, so I would not be surprised to see a little pullback there. Energy has been the weakest sector at negative 4.84% this year, and is the most oversold sector, so somewhat attractive to me, knowing that.
The momentum people work against our contrarian views.
Yeah, absolutely. And momentum is an important factor, but it's not the only factor.
That's right. You must have a little patience to think like we do.
Telecom is the second worst sector this year at negative 3.79%. And every other sector is actually positive on the year, and the S&P is right in the middle at 6.2%. So not overall pretty attractive if you have a diversified portfolio. In case you were wondering, the move from 20,000 to 21,000 took just 35 days. It's tied for the shortest amount of time to make a 1,000-point move ever.
Now, in all fairness to numbers, because you know what statistics do.
Yeah, I was just getting to this.
It's, yeah, the smallest percentage increase that ever created a 1,000-point gain. But who cares?
Right.
Because we tied a record.
It represented a 4.8% move, while the one in 2000 was actually a 9% move on the Dow. So not really comparing apples to apples when you talk about 1,000-point increments over time. There was a ton of economic data this week, and it was pretty good, I would say. The GDP was expected to be revised up to 2.1% growth, but instead came in at stayed flat at 1.9%.
You know why the big component of that, though?
Which one stood out to you?
The thing that stood out to me is that state and local governments were down, and that dragged down the whole index.
Right.
And I got to think that is a good thing.
Well, yeah, it depends how you look at it, but I would agree with that.
I look at the big picture and where the government spending falls into it, and being a monetarist rather than a Keynesian, I say I believe that's going to free up a lot more money to move faster
among the
private sector. Therefore, it should translate into a better year GDP growth. That's the way I think of it anyway.
Could be. Jobless claims came in at 223,000, a level that we haven't seen since 1973.
And it 4-day week
just keeps getting lower, though.
I know, but I always look at those 4-day weeks. The unemployment offices were not open on Monday. Of course it's going to be down a little. That said, it's a heck of a good number.
Yeah, and it just continues the streak of really low numbers we've seen there. So,
well, people are afraid to lay off people because where are you going to get new ones?
Yeah, there is a shortage right now.
There definitely is a shortage.
Also positive was the ISM manufacturing and non-manufacturing reports. Manufacturing hit a multi-year high at 57.7, and non came in at a strong 57.6. So all in all, the economy looks to be heating up.
And it, like I said, it's reflected in a lot of ways, but the consumer confidence numbers, if you look at that chart, up to Election Day, and then a couple of days after that, and the whole trajectory of the chart has changed. And people are feeling really good about this, and that makes me very happy. We got a lot more to talk about after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we were just wrapping up the market wrap, and it did not close at an all-time high, but we sure had a good week, and we did hit some new highs. I hope we keep on going. Don't be surprised if it takes a little pause, but I don't see any reason at all to be altering your asset allocation. If anything, what I would be worried about is if you've got a little bit of cash and they're watching in case we get a little dip that Adam and I are both kind of expecting, might be a golden opportunity to do a little buying. Good morning, Captain Dave.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning.
Remember I called you last week about this mystery investment thing that was going to pay double digits and all that?
Yep.
Well, I did some research on it. It's called the 26F program.
Ah,
you know what that is?
Yes. I certainly do.
Yes, we actually...
Yeah, why don't you tell people about it? Because, man, it sounds like a scam to death.
Well, there's other names for what a 26F is.
Yeah, it's...
The common one would be a drip program.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're scaring people by saying the federal government is going to have a retirement blackout, whatever that means.
On April 10th, teased
by... April the 10th, 2017, the world is going to end.
That's right. And why is it going to end? Because the fiduciary law is coming in, which means that some people are going to have to stop giving bad advice to some investors. Yeah. But that's called a retirement blackout by Keith Fitzgerald. Isn't that incredible?
Well, anyway, that's what it was. That's what the come on was for it. The 26F program, a little known.
Little known, right.
Secret.
But everybody knows what a dividend reinvestment program is, though. So if you just called it a DRIP or dividend reinvestment program, everybody would know and you wouldn't sell any newsletters.
But anyway, I just called to say I did some research on that and let you know what I had found out, and that's what they're talking about on these blind advertisements you hear on the other stations about, you know, the guaranteed double-digit income.
Guaranteed.
Trump endorses this thing. You know, yeah, okay, fine.
Did you ever read the headlines that the people said you could piggyback off of the Canadian Social Security system?
Yeah, I read that one too.
Know what that is?
No.
The guy gets the reports of what the Canadian Social Security system, which actually has money in it, the stocks that they own that pay dividends, and then he puts them in a newsletter and he sells you the newsletter so you can buy the same stocks. He calls it piggybacking off of the system when you don't even have to have been to Canada, much less worked there. It's a blatant lie.
Yep. Hey, listen, you know, for many, many years when I wasn't driving ships, I trained captains. And I always said I had the best job in the world. I sold hot air. And there's a lot of these guys.
Isn't that what we do?
A lot of hot air. And there's somebody will always buy it, I promise you.
There's anyway, one born every minute, Dave.
I'm heading for the island Monday morning. I'll be gone for a couple of weeks. I'll talk to you.
Have a good trip.
I will.
And say farewell to Jamaica.
Yaman.
Bye-bye.
One thing to remember, people, when you're reading on sites on the internet, especially Yahoo is the one that I see the most most often, and you go through the headlines and pick the articles that you want to read, about every third article will have a really, really crazy, catchy headline, and right next to it in very small print with an asterisk will say sponsored. And that means that is an advertisement. They disguise it to look like just another one of their finance headlines, but it's actually someone paying to get put in there and make it look that way to sell you a newsletter. So just be careful. If you see that sponsored thing, don't even bother clicking on it.
No.
It's not worth reading.
And there's a bunch of names that if you see them, one of them being Stansberry, don't go there either.
Exactly.
This piece of paper is a file that I keep on my computer, and every day that I find a headline that I laugh at or get angry with, either one, which sometimes are the same headlines, then I put it down here just so if we want to talk about it for any reason on Saturday, we can. Now, let's see. We had one really good one. Oh, this one was not this week, but it was recently. Chuck Schumer says, waive tax on the Olympians because hard work shouldn't be punished.
Okay.
And he wants to do what to the marginal rate?
Right.
So. Now, isn't the marginal rate affecting more people who work harder? And isn't raising your marginal rate punishment?
Now, I don't disagree with his thoughts about the Olympians. It is pretty ridiculous. You get taxed for winning a gold medal.
No, but if you can see one of those, can't you see the other one?
Exactly. It just makes no sense.
And the answer, of course, is no, you can't. I love the one that recently that said Wall Street Insider reveals the top stock of 2017. I'll tell you what the top stock for 2017 is, but I won't tell you till next January.
Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff. This is why we're looking at a fiduciary rule, so that we can get rid of a lot of this stuff. The problem with the fiduciary rule, aside from the fact that they keep trying to delay it, is that it's only been written to encompass advice given to retirement plans. So if you're talking to a broker and you don't have an IRA, he can mislead you just as long as he wants to and as badly as he wants to. And that's where you get things like this. Update to the annuity returns headline says 13.2% 2016 annuity return, true investor returns with no risk. That would land me in jail.
Now, I'd be curious to do a study and take 10 people and 10 experts and pick their 50 best guesses at what the top stock of the year for this year would be. And I bet that maybe none of them would get it right.
Maybe.
There's just no way. You cannot predict that.
No. When you see things like the secret 26F and the retirement blackout and things like that, these things ought to be just like the light bulb that goes off. Oh, well, let's talk about a trivia question. This is the season that we're starting to think a lot about things like taxes and general money and all that. And one of the things that I see going on out there and have been for quite some time is student debt. There's a couple things that are very important about student debt. One of them is that it has now become bigger than car debt. And that is scary because what backs up student debt?
Just the education of the person, the individual.
Many of which have no fundamental skills, even after a degree. The other thing that bothers me about it is that a lot of these people think that all they've got to do is wait long enough and somebody's going to forgive it. So my trivia question today is, only 10% of student loans are estimated to be paid off for them in the future. And you know that the rules, you work for 10 or 20 years and it's got to be in certain areas and all that. There are ways that it can be done, yes. But how many students believe that they're debt? What percentage of students believe that their debt is going to be paid for them, and it's higher than 10%? And that's the truth.
A friend of mine asked me a week or two ago, he listens to the show somewhat, and asked me how to short student debt because he thinks it's a bubble that's coming and wanted to try and take advantage of it. And I thought about it for a while. I don't think there's a way, because student debt, you can't get out of it unless you die.
Yeah.
You can't get out of it in bankruptcy.
No, it's one of the few things that's absolutely protected to the lender.
They can garnish your wages. They can do all sorts of things, but they will get their money. Yeah.
Yes, they will. So my question is, what percentage of students believe that their loan will be paid for them? And it's not a pretty sight. That's brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. All right, we've got a couple of minutes here. Why don't you tell folks how and where to reach us, because we do actually have jobs during the week, and we're always happy to see listeners out there and answer their questions in person as well as on the radio.
Sure. If you find yourself needing to meet with a financial planner, if you're nearing retirement or you come into an inheritance or you just want to get a grip on your finances and start putting together a plan, you can always reach us in the office at 904-685-1505. Or even easier, go online to vanweefinancial.com. And from our website, you can book a one-hour appointment with us. There's never a charge for that. It's just simply a conversation with us to get some advice and see if there's an interest in doing business together. And if not, no big deal. You go on your way and we go on ours. But I promise you'll leave knowing more than you knew when you came in.
I've never had anybody tell me that the hour was wasted.
Yeah, we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/VanWeFinancial and Twitter at VanWeFinancial. Or if you just want to ask a question, you don't like calling into radio shows, just email us at info@VanWeFinancial.com.
Speaking of which, that happened this week, didn't it?
It did, yeah. And I guess I could set that up and then give the answer. I had a listener named Dave had emailed and asked me if what we thought about international small cap growth as a investment segment. And if so, what would be the best way to buy it? And then how it had done over the last 10 years. And the answer was kind of surprising. So I'll get to that right after the break, though.
Okay.
Did the answer.
I want to give a big shout out to Chris Sununu. You know who that is?
I do not.
He is the sitting governor of New Hampshire.
Okay.
New Hampshire just became the 12th state in the union to allow, and it took three tries, to allow constitutional carry, which means the citizens of the state of New Hampshire can now own and carry a gun concealed or in plain sight. And I'm going to predict right now that the crime rate in New Hampshire does not go up. In fact, I'll take it one step further than that. I'll bet you start seeing it fall.
It's probably pretty low already, but yeah.
I've often wondered why people think concealed carry is a better deterrent than open carry.
Maybe if the criminal doesn't know you're armed, it's...
I think that's a specious argument. If he knows you're armed,
yeah.
That's, to me, if I were going to pick on somebody and had a sidearm showing, I think I'd go somewhere else. But congratulations, Governor Sununu. Don't go anywhere, folks. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. And if you step outside into the sunshine and warmth, you'll know why, because your grass is turning green right as you watch it. And it will be getting longer, too. Does that? We had a little rain. So.
Yeah.
It's been a tremendous winter as far as I'm concerned. Unfortunately, it's going to lead to a little more lawn mowing, a few more bugs, but it's hard to complain because it's been so nice.
Yeah, but if you pay Troy, you don't have to worry about that.
I like that idea.
Exactly.
Almost as much as he does, probably. All right. Small cap international growth funds.
Growth, yeah.
That is a very specific category of available investable assets throughout the world.
Right. And even more specific, he was looking for a no-load mutual fund that covered that space. So that is a really, really specific question. So, of course, my first thought was, if there isn't a good no-load mutual fund, and he had actually sent me a screenshot with a Schwab screener that looked at the no-load mutual funds in that category and looked at their 10-year return and itemized them by who did the best. And the best one came up at 8.43%, which, not bad for a 10-year return,
no,
especially
no, not bad
in
at
an
all.
Area that has basically been in a bear market that whole time. So this fund has done quite well. So I looked into it. It had fairly high fees, which isn't too shocking considering how specific that when you get into more difficult areas to pick stocks and funds that are smaller, which this would be, seeing above a 1% expense ratio isn't very surprising. So it's not terrible. But
no, and I care a lot less about what the fund manager gets than what the fund manager has left over for the
shareholders.
Exactly.
So if you can return, his closest peer was 4.17%. So I would say paying that 1.5% or whatever it was a pretty good deal.
Yeah, because the second biggest one didn't have tiny low fees. You can bet on that.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like you're comparing anything but apples to apples.
If you're going to pay for something, you want to see some good results, and that guy definitely did it.
And 10 years is a good long
definitely.
Look at the guy, too. That's a track record that he could be proud of.
So I looked into the ETF space, and I really couldn't find a good one. The closest thing I found was Vanguard's All World Except U.S. Small Cap ETF, which is not quite as specific because it does include growth and value stocks. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't an exact match, but that one has a really low fee, and it's a pretty good fund from what I could tell. I don't use it, but...
Did you look at the 10-year?
I didn't record that, but it compared to its peers, it was by far the biggest fund, which gives you some tradability and some safety and some liquidity, which is good. Mm-hmm. And it's Vanguard, so you've got the name attached to it. Not a bad way to go if you're interested in that space. The other thing I looked at was emerging market ETFs, which are not exactly the same thing, but could be comparable, and there are definitely some overlap in stocks in that area. And so there's a couple of them that I like in that space as well, but they're not exactly what he was looking for. So unfortunately, I had to email him back and say, my answer is no, there isn't really one that I would recommend.
Okay.
I think that this Oberweis International no-load mutual fund is probably your best bet if you really want to buy a no-load mutual fund in that space. But sometimes there just isn't a really good answer, which surprised me. But then considering that the rise of ETFs over the last 10 years has been so explosive and this area has been so bad, that I think that as that area improves, you might see more funds looking into getting into that space. But right now, there really just isn't a good fund available that I could find.
Okay, so general observation on asset allocation. When you're going into the international market, the only rule that I have personally about that is you never ever get very deeply involved in internationals. 10% is big, 15 is absolutely as far as I like to go.
Yeah, well, you might be in the minority there, because a lot of portfolio managers like to see up to 25% in international.
I know, and I think that's too much, but that's just a personal opinion. But I think once you decide that you're going to have an international component for equities and or bonds, that it ought to stay fairly small, which to me says, unless you've got a lot of money, that you should stay pretty general. Like, for instance, an international all-stock fund, or maybe an international balanced fund or something like that. I find the concept of an international small-cap growth fund to be very limiting.
Well, if you're doing that along with an international small cap value fund, and you're doing 2 to 3% in each,
I don't think that's a
bad idea. But you really need to diversify within your international space as well. And the other thing with international is, if you didn't hold it over the last 10 years, you probably look like a genius if you did 100% U.S. because we've done really well, and a lot of the international countries have not, or they've been very up and down. So it just depends on the time frame you're looking at. There are definitely times when international outperforms U.S. equities, but this hasn't been one of them in general.
No, and one thing that Adam and I agreed on for a long time is, in the international arena, since there are how many investable stock exchanges?
Countless.
Yeah. That I don't think we have time, much less knowledge, to say, all right, I'm going to buy this country right now, and then that country later, and this one. But there are people who can do that. They're called international mutual fund managers, and they're paid a whopping amount of money to go around the world and handpick companies in any location that isn't the U.S. and put them in their fund. And when those companies perform, they stay in, and when they don't perform, they're kicked out. In other words, it's active management. Exchange-traded funds, and I'm going to say all of them because I don't like the ones that aren't this way, but they're passive management funds, which means they buy up a segment of the market that's supposed to emulate something or is representative of something, and then they're not actively traded in the interim, which makes them very tax efficient And while things are good, that's good. But it does not surprise me in the least that there's a fund like the one you were talking about that has a really good performance record, because the guy's obviously very, very good at what he does, which is picking small stocks out of the international arena.
Yeah, and the growth side. So it's, but wow, what a tough thing to be able to do.
I would worship the ground that he walks on, except it would bore me to tears.
And you know what they say, too, that track record doesn't necessarily predict future performance either.
No, but there's a rule whose name I can never remember that says, but it is the best predictor we've ever found.
Yeah, and I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, but there are, as you said, there are many, many exchange-traded funds. That number grows all the time. I think when I started in this business, there might have been 50 or 100. Last time I looked, there was something like 1,800. And there are a couple that have closed up because they were just kind of, anyway. But there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds to choose from. It is an excellent way to invest. I would say that a large percentage of our clients' money is held in ETFs.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Huge amount. But there are things that mutual fund managers are really good at, and I don't care so much what you have to pay them if they keep doing their job for us.
Definitely.
If they're going to return 4% more than everybody else and they charge 1.5%, hallelujah.
Yeah, absolutely. And specifically, two of them that we like to use, active mutual funds, are international and high-yield debt.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the riskier asset categories, in my opinion.
Whereas you talked a little bit about emerging markets, and there, I'm very happy just to use EEM, the iShare exchange-traded fund, because I just want a little bit of everything in the mutual or in the emerging market area. Because basically what happens to emerging markets is they're either in good times or bad times. If you look at the charts for the exchange-traded funds and the EEM, or there are others, and you see that the chart is looking good and it's starting to climb the mountain, fine, buy some if you want to. But once they roll over and start down and you got an eye on it, don't hesitate. These are not long-term holding vehicles. They're trading vehicles, very similar to the oil and the gasoline and the precious metals. For all of those commodity-oriented things, there is a time to buy, there's a time to sell, and you shouldn't forget either one of those. That's a little word from Wise here. Okay, trivia question still out there. 10% of student loans in this country are expected at some point to be forgiven. What percentage of students who have student loans expect that they will be among the ones that are paid off? And they're wrong. And it's going to be a big comeuppance someday for that group of people. I hope you're not one of them. All right, don't go anywhere. We got one more break, and we'll be back and talk about some tax-related things or what you want to do. Van Wee Financial Hour,
right back. Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And April 18th is right around the corner. And yes, I did just say April 18th. And I was going to talk about taxes. Why did I say April 18th? Well, this year, the calendar finds April 15th, the traditional due date, falling on a Saturday. So when that happens, it's always pushed later. It's never brought earlier than that. So we go out to Monday, which is April 17th. But April 17th in Washington, D.C. is the celebration of Emancipation Day. Emancipation Day is one of the celebrations, one of many, of the abolition of slavery, and well worth being recognized. But I find a lot of irony in Washington, D.C. celebrating Emancipation Day the day before we're all reminded so abruptly that we are slaves to the bloated federal government.
Exactly.
But I digress, as I so love to do. So we got a few weeks left to think about what we can do to help ourselves. There aren't many things left that we can do for 2016, but there are some. There are also things that you can do for 2017. And unfortunately, when most people file, the second that paycheck, if they you give them one, or the one that they give you back, which is your money, as soon as those things clear, you put taxes out of your mind until usually about a year from right now when you start thinking about it again. Well, that's not going to help you become a better manager of your own money. Tax planning is a 24/7, 365 issue for people who really care enough to do a good job for themselves and not pay any more than they have to. How many times have you run into people who said, oh, yeah, well, I always leave something for them to catch? You know what that says? It says, I always overpay my taxes. Don't. Why do you think you have to leave something to have the government catch it if you get audited? First off, you know what your chances of audit are if you don't make $1 million or more? They're almost negligible. Plus, if you follow the law, then what do you got to worry about? I have had several correspondences with the IRS over time. Back in the 80s, I had three audits in a row. Nothing major ever happened. They sent me money a couple of times, so they left me alone after that. But it wasn't because I didn't try to take advantage of every little thing I could. And I've had a couple since. I've had my 401k audit and things like that. And I have found them, in every case, to be very reasonable people. Do you fear what they can do? Yes. But if you are diligent and or your tax preparer is diligent and you do things by the book and you pay your taxes, there is nothing to fear. So do not overpay on purpose, people. You're just taking it out of your money and letting it blow around in the wind. So what do we do now? Well, we got a lot of people out there eligible to do an IRA that's deductible yet for this year. And certain small business type retirement plans are also able to be opened this year for last year. Not all of them. Simple Plan, for instance, has to be opened by September 30 of the year for which it is being contributed to. So if you start working on your taxes a little bit, or if you have your preparer do it, and I strongly advocate that everybody get online with one of the sites like TurboTax, and now Credit Karma is offering absolutely free tax returns. Now, none of these services require you to file with them, but you can go on there, and the first thing I would do is take your last year's return and enter all the numbers as if it were going to be this year's return and see how it comes out. Then go back without filing, just save your work, go back and make any changes. Did you get an increase in salary or anything like that happen this year? Put that in and see what it does to the bottom line. And then go back and say, okay, what are the rules for doing a deductible IRA or a small business retirement account? If you find that you qualify but have not yet done so, stick right in there. Before you even exchange any money, stick the number in there and see what would happen if you saved $1,000 or $2,000 or $5,500 or $6,500. See what it impacts on your taxes. If you can save a bunch of that money, and if you can afford to outlay just a little bit, you might be surprised at the percentage that Uncle Sam is picking up. The IRA deduction is an above-the-line deduction. That is a good thing because it is worth a lot more than a page two deduction. It's not a tax credit, but it's good. Also, for people who are going to get refunds on their returns, if you want some of that refund directed specifically to your IRA, IRS will do that for you, and you don't have to look at the money. Out of sight, out of mind, you reduce your taxes, fund your IRA, things are good. All right, capital gains and preferred dividends. Too late for 2016, but certainly not too late for 2017. Look at your holdings that are outside of your retirement accounts and see, are there things that are up that you're concerned about? Might want to take some profits. Are there things that are down and don't seem to have very good prospects? You might want to take those so that you can offset the gains and the losses. Along the way, look at the holding period on these things and learn the rules for qualified dividends. If you're an income investor and get qualified dividends, you get a preferred tax rate. Also, lower income people, if you have capital gains that are able to be taken, and you are in either of the lowest two tax brackets, 0 or 15, your capital gains are free. But remember that your adjusted gross income includes the amount of the capital gain. So if you're pushing it right up to the limit before the capital gain, so if you sold it, it would push you over the line. You're not going to get it free. You might want to hold off. But if there's a way, for instance, by reducing your IRA, by contributing to your IRA and then selling a capital gain, you might be able to offset all of that and get your capital gains for free. It's boring to most people. I know it's like talking about insurance, taxes and insurance, the two ways you put people to sleep the quickest. But people, it is very important. It's your money. Who should care more than you do about your money? All right, now let's look at some of the things. We're in a state of flux tax-wise. Everybody knows that all of the parties to the last election have their own ideas on taxes. But Trump won, and his ideas on taxes are fairly dramatic, should he get them. It involves a decrease in the rates rather than what everybody always fears, which is the increase. But there might be some casualties, shall we say, along the way. So we looked at a few of these to see what's likely to survive. Earned income tax credit. This is what the IRS calls a refundable tax credit, meaning for low-income people, they will give you money that you didn't even put in. It's not a return of your money. It's a return of other people's money. I am not here to test what I think about the morality of a system like that. It was a Ronald Reagan idea, actually. But I'm telling you, if you qualify, I think it's likely to survive. America's favorite deduction is the mortgage interest. This is likely to be unchanged for almost everybody. There might be limits placed, further limits placed at the top for the really high income. It's not something I would worry about. Charitable deductions. I think everybody in Congress is afraid to even bring up the topic of not allowing a deduction for charitable contributions. Expect your charitable contributions to be very much like they were for 2016 deductible. And again, those things can help you with your overall taxes, but it is a page two deduction. All right, child tax credits. If you think it would be difficult for a congressman to propose a change in the charitable contribution deduction, try child tax credits. Anybody who even brings it up is probably going to be voted out of Congress. Expect to keep it.
Well, isn't Ivanka working on a new plan that's going to add to that for child care?
Absolutely true. Now, what might be threatened? You know that if you live in a state that has state income tax, that's deductible. If you do not, then you get to deduct an amount for sales taxes you paid. This is very likely going away if Trump gets his way on the new lower tax rates. Keep receipts anyway. Always plan as if there will be no change. Congress is not reliable to make any given change. They're not even reliable enough to make a sweeping change prior to next year because of everything that's going on. So learn something about your own taxes. It can only help you. That way also, if you use a preparer, you'll give them better information. Remember the old saying, GEICO, garbage in, garbage out? You give your preparer better information, they'll give you a better tax return. Just that simple. All right, keep your eyes and ears open. This week in the market, it ought to be really exciting. 50% of students think their loans are going to be forgiven. 40% will be disappointed. See you next week. This is Van Wee Financial Hour.